Okay, now we go to the medical section of this discussion. We're going to start with Al Gwertzman. Al is a attending anesthesiologist at the Atrium Health. Al, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Larry. What
if just one quick thing. Before you get started, Al, for our speakers who are not talking, if you can hit your mute button, some of the mute button is not. Al, go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Larry. What have doctors learned about COVID? The short answer is not a lot. Fortunately, we are managing COVID surprisingly well, especially given the compressed time frame we have been operating under. COVID, with a plethora of signs and symptoms, has become medicine's 21st century great masquerader. It is an elusive and dangerous foe. 70 to 80% of its victims are asymptomatic or show only very mild symptoms, allowing unknowing and undetected spread. Severe illness and death from COVID due to unknown genetic predisposition and other risk factors has created anxiety and fear. As far as course of treatment and changes, despite better understanding of COVID's mechanism of action, unprecedented financial resources, and the greatest global minds and institutions working hand in hand with healthcare systems, our therapeutic toolbox is disappointingly essentially empty. Dual therapy with hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin has not been shown to be effective and may, when used in high doses, lead to life-threatening effects on the heart's electrical system. However, prophylactic use, not unlike for malaria prevention, remains to be seen and studied. Interleukin-6 has not demonstrated any effectiveness. Near-term pre-vaccine options, like convalescent plasma and monoclonal antibodies, may show some benefit in severely ill COVID patients, but benefit remains unclear. Antivirals. Unfortunately, most have not shown efficacy, but the good news is remdesivir, one of the antivirals, is promising, and in several studies has been shown to shorten duration of illness. This drug will most likely remain in our armamentarium, and its use and effectiveness for prophylaxis and treatment in less severe disease is being studied. Blood thinners. Clots in the lung, brain, and heart are life-threatening, and blood thinners have been shown to be effective in treating these very ill COVID patients and reducing mortality. Unlike the therapeutics, our supportive care equipment box is full and effective. Fortunately, as time went on, through postmortem examination and better understanding of COVID mechanism of action, we learned that we were treating the wrong disease. Vents were doing more harm than good, increasing death rates at an alarming rate. Treatment of the correct disease process, utilizing non-invasive oxygen support equipment such as high-flow nasal cannula and CPAP, was probably the single most important intervention leading to decreased patient morbidity and mortality. These days now, vents are utilized only as a last resort for severely ill hypoxic patients. Fortunately, death rates on vents have also decreased. So as far as lessons learned, initially medicine was on the offense, very aggressive in using big bazookas. Oddly, after 4 months, we learned that sometimes less is more. Our current regimen is far less invasive, lower tech, and more narrowed in focus, and has been effective in managing COVID. This includes prevention such as the mask, hand hygiene, and physical distancing, oxygen support, blood thinners, remdesivir, and I would say most importantly, the human body's most amazing adaptability and resilience, utilizing its complex defense mechanisms. As far as the future and second wave, assuming no vaccine, the most important global experiment will be taking place in Sweden in late fall. To answer the question whether natural herd immunity or the no-lockdown approach is effective in managing morbidity and mortality from the virus. The data and outcomes analysis will have major implications on how COVID is managed here at home and globally in the future. Sweden, which has support from the WHO, has accepted a near-term higher mortality rate of about 10%. About half of these patients are nursing home patients, and this rate is about 2 times the global average. Swedish epidemiologists had predicted about 30 to 40% immunity, but their current numbers stand about just below 10%. Herd immunity requires approximately 60%, so one might conclude the experiment has failed. However, the issues for Sweden, as in the United States, is testing remains inaccurate, so the predictive value of the data remains low, as we have seen many times before with COVID. As a result, unfortunately, Most likely, only real-time experience and data will provide accurate outcomes related to COVID death and infection. Regarding the U.S., expected local and regional microspikes have occurred, especially as more states reopen. As long as this remains localized and that there is no vaccine available and hospitals are not overwhelmed, I contend that these spikes may actually be welcomed to help communities further the process of herd immunity and to blunt the impact of a potential second wave in the fall. Hospitals will be ready for a second wave if it does occur. A more thoughtful, stepwise, less reactionary plan is in place. Equipment such as high-flow nasal cannula, vents, PPE have seen increased production and will meet demand. Hospitals will most likely see fewer patients, and we are more adept at separating hot and cold patients and have improved our ability to flex up the number of ICU beds and staff. Also, our treatment protocols are more successful even for the most severely ill. Finally, reopening of the hospitals for business and COVID testing has proven to be medicine's most challenging and risky current proposition. Our task is to ensure hospitals are safe havens despite housing hot patients and to prevent any outpatient or visitor from a hospital-acquired COVID infection. Risk strategy, not unlike state openings, requires a balance between risk mitigation and revenue production. We also utilize a four-phase or tier approach, introducing healthy patients with low-risk same-day procedures first. Then over several weeks, we ramp up to a phase or tier four, which has the sickest patients with high-risk procedures and lengthy hospital stays. The greatest obstacle we face is the inaccuracy in testing due to limitations of the standard RT-PCR deep nasopharyngeal swab test. We do not fully understand the course of the infection as it relates to viral load, leading to false negatives. John Hopkins has estimated that up to 95% of those tested on day one of infection may actually have a false negative test result. Through the course of infection, that number may decrease to as low as 8 to 12%. Symptomatic patients or those in highly infected populations may see a reduced false negative rate. Finally, the second challenge is no national testing guidelines for elective surgery patients or visitors. And often the process seems illogical. Everyone entering the hospital must wear a mask and have their temperatures checked. All outpatients are COVID tested and have screening questionnaires, but the time frame can vary anywhere from 2 days up to 10 days. Some hospitals require patients to attest to self-quarantining after the test until the date of surgery, while others do not. Visitors are not COVID tested and may or may not have screening questionnaires. This creates a potential breach in safe haven or bubble protocol. As far as our PPE, if a patient passes the questionnaire, is asymptomatic and negative COVID, the medical team only follows pre-COVID universal precaution. That means no N95s. At our hospital, we estimated the likelihood of encountering a false negative outpatient in the OR at about 1 in 500. So without the N95 and we are encountering this patient, the team would be at significant increased risk for infection. The good news is that 4 weeks into reopening, we have not seen an increase in patient, visitor, or healthcare worker infection rates. So despite the potential holes, our current strategy appears to be working well. If this trend continues, it may be a good template for other sectors. Thank you very much, Larry.
Thanks, Al.